I really wanted somebody to tell me everything was going to be okay.
That's a woman in a small Missouri town remembering how she felt when she found out she was pregnant. She'd just left an abusive husband and thought the relationship was behind her until a home pregnancy test indicated otherwise. She'd always wanted a baby, but not like this. So she went to a crisis center where she says they pressured her to carry the pregnancy to term. Then she called Planned Parenthood to set up an abortion consultation, and that didn't feel right either.
I hung up the phone and I cried the entire night.
She was navigating a highly politicized world, but the advice she needed was personal. In the end, it was a conversation with a friend that helped her make a decision for herself.
That's when everything shifted. I became me again, and I was in charge of my body, and it was my decision to have that baby and no one else's.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is a conversation that tends to fall apart. The conversation about abortion. There's a lot of ambivalence out there when it comes to how people feel about abortion, yet most of us land squarely on one side or the other politically. In Kansas and Missouri, it's been particularly contentious, with laws in both states aiming to restrict the procedure and challenges to those laws going all the way to the state Supreme Courts. Just yesterday, a judge ruled against Missouri's abortion restrictions. In the hours that have passed since the ruling, Planned Parenthood said they'll provide abortions in four more Missouri locations. And the state's attorney general has already made clear that he plans to appeal the decision. Today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're going to try to bring both sides to the table and see if there's any common ground. If not, what does that mean for policy and discourse? We'll come back to that question. Let's start with real people's stories. Monique Salazar, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for having me on.
When you came on the show a little while back, you were about to appear in an HBO special about women sharing abortion stories. And when I asked you what inspired you to participate, you said you were doing it because it scared you. What's scary about telling this story publicly?
Well, it's a story that I kept to myself for many years. Actually, the first time that I went through the entire story step by step was with Tracy Joss Tragos, the director of the film, over the phone. So it was a story that I had not spoken publicly about. I was worried about my very religious family. I was worried about my friends. I was also worried about getting doxxed, perhaps, because certain people get very passionate about things. So the gynecologist that's featured in the movie was doxxed when she moved to St. Louis. So
what does that mean?
Getting doxxed means someone finds out all of your personal information and makes it public on the internet for a certain amount of time as a way to threaten or harass someone.
Oh, wow.
So that was a very real possibility.
What? So that being said, I mean, that this is a hard thing to talk about publicly for a lot of reasons. Let's tell the story. I mean, what was your life like? This was, what, 13 years ago?
This was 13 years ago. I've had one abortion. I was married, newly married. According to the timeline, I pretty much conceived right after we got married. And there, it was an abusive relationship, and I was coming from an abusive home, and there was no way that I was going to raise a child in an abusive home, especially not at the level of trauma, psychological trauma that I had at the time.
I mean, do you remember finding out you were pregnant?
I do remember, absolutely, almost to the second, detail by detail.
What went through your mind?
I can't say it on the radio, but it was
expletives went through your
yes,
mind.
Yes, absolutely. It was very much like, oh my God, what do I do now?
I mean, was that because strictly of the abusive nature of the relationship you were in, or was there more to it?
There was that. There was my own psychological trauma that I was dealing with. I have PTSD from childhood trauma, which was undiagnosed at the time, and really just resulted in me acting very impulsively. There was no way that I was bringing in enough money at the job that I worked to support a child. And I was going to college at the time, and I wanted to finish college. So it was not just one factor. There were many factors that went into it. I had always wanted a child. I always wanted to have a family because when, you know, I grew up not feeling like I was unconditionally loved. So I wanted to create a family for myself, which is, you know, essentially why I got married in the first place. But then everything started to steamroll and I was like, this is not a good situation for anyone that's in this situation, much less bringing someone else who's innocent into that situation.
Did you know right away that you wanted to have an abortion, or was it a decision you came to gradually? I mean, did you consider other paths to not bringing an innocent child into that situation?
Well, there's several, you know, I did think about it, but it was always pretty clear to me from the beginning that an abortion was going to be the best choice in that situation.
Did you ever get medical advice, like, as the decision was being made, or was it you made the decision first and then the medical piece came into it?
I made the decision first and then had to look up in a real-life phone book what Planned Parenthood's number was. This information wasn't on the internet quite yet. You know, this is still in the baby days of when Wikipedia wasn't considered a good source for information.
So you got out the yellow pages?
Literally got out the yellow pages and located the clinic in Roland Park.
I mean, what kind of medical guidance did you receive as you were going through the process?
There wasn't a whole lot of information available for me on the internet. It was sort of, and not in any way to decry Planned Parenthood, but I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of information over the phone. It's more like, you know, show up and make sure you're not wearing any jewelry or makeup, et cetera. You know, prep for surgery, have somebody to drive you home, et cetera.
It's kind of nuts and bolts.
I'm sorry?
Nuts and bolts kind of stuff.
Yeah, nuts and bolts. Everything was very nuts and bolts. And so when we got there, it was explained to us, because we were there for, I think I was there for like 8 hours total.
And is we you and your husband?
Oh, no, he didn't show up. He had a mandatory barbecue to go to, quote unquote.
Oh, man. So the procedure was the first time you actually went?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever been to a Planned Parenthood.
Did you get any spiritual or emotional guidance? I mean,
I didn't tell anyone. I didn't seek advice. The only person that knew, there were two people that knew at the time. And that was my best friend, my two best friends who were both male. Oh, wait. And I had told my neighbor because she had come out on to the porch when I was hysterically crying because I had just found out that I was pregnant. So there were three people that I knew. I didn't want to spread it around. I didn't want to talk about it. And to me, it was just something that I wanted to go through privately, which in the end did not turn out to be the best idea.
Do you think there were other options?
In terms of seeking for help, at the time, there probably were. I didn't know how to get a hold of them. I didn't know who to talk to. I had seen ads for crisis centers, but I knew that that was absolutely not a place that I would be shown the truth in an authentic way or talked to in an authentic way. It would just be trying to push me into carrying the baby to full term. So there, luckily now, this is also 13 years ago, now all of those resources are available. There are articles where you can see exactly what happens during an abortion. And there's tons of help, Facebook groups. None of this existed 13 years ago.
So how did the day play out? I mean, the day of the procedure. You've already said that your husband was at a mandatory barbecue?
Yeah, he was in the military, and he had told me that he would drive me and take me home. And the night before, he informed me that he had to be at the base for a mandatory barbecue. And I was devastated because I didn't know who to tell or who to ask, like, hey, can you drive me to my abortion tomorrow? So I made the choice to just take myself. And so I, you know, drove to the abortion clinic. We had the procedure done. And it took, like I said, about 8 hours. We went in and talked to a counselor. We went and met with the doctor beforehand. And since I was driving myself home, the only anesthetic that I got was 2 Tylenol and a Valium.
Oh.
So it was, I have a very high tolerance for painkillers. It takes a lot. Like whenever I go to the dentist, they always have to stab me multiple times in the mouth. which is why I hate the dentist. But the procedure itself was rather painful. But the male nurse that I was with, you know, he told me, he was like, you can totally squeeze my hand if you need to. And he just let me hold his hand. And he was really the first person that had been that upfront and supportive and just personal with me. And I'll never forget that man to this day, that he just comforted me in that moment. And then I had to drive myself home, and they recommended that I stop at Wendy's to get something to eat, just to get something in my stomach. And so I got a chicken sandwich and I ate a bite, and it made me really nauseous. So I put it in the seat behind next to me. And then I was driving home on I-35, you know, going about 70, and I had to vomit, and there was no way that I could get off the highway. So I learned that I can drive a vehicle and vomit going 70 miles an hour. So I puked into the Wendy's bag that I had, which was not strong enough to hold anything. So when I got home, I was bleeding, I was in pain, I was covered in vomit, and I was incredibly by myself.
How did you feel, like, physically and emotionally in the days and weeks that followed?
It was a hard time. Physically, there's cramping. It's not really that big of a deal, but there are times when you are like, I do have to sit down.
Did you have a job at the time where you had to take time off, things like that?
I did. I got 2 days off. I got a doctor's note for 2 days, but I worked at a restaurant, so it was very much carrying trays that weigh 30 pounds over my head and running around the restaurant and, you know, all of that physical labor that goes into a service industry job, which was tough kind of to work with after that, for sure.
And I mean, what about the emotional piece of it? You talked about being devastated that your husband at the last minute didn't join you.
The entire situation, it was a very emotional time for me. And I think that it was such an emotional time for me because I didn't have any support and I didn't have anybody to tell and I didn't have anybody to be like, you're an okay person still. I come from a really religious background, so abortion in my family wasn't even talked about. When my cousin became pregnant as a teenager, that wasn't even an option. It was just that she now had the shame of being an unwed mother. So what was I if I had an abortion? You know, if they already had shamed that person so much. And then, you know, so I had no one to tell because that to them was like pretty much the ultimate sin. So I did feel that residual like religious guilt from that. And I had always wanted a family. So for me to have that so close and be like, it's not the right time, you know, that was also something that I had to deal with, that I don't have this family.
Would you make the same decision today, or would you, looking back at this younger woman, advise her to make the same decision today?
Absolutely. 100% would tell her that she is doing the absolute correct thing and to not feel that much, you know, isolation about it and to reach out to other people.
What do you think people either don't understand or haven't considered about abortion, regardless of which side they take on the political debate, just on the human scale?
On the human scale, there's always going to be a need for abortions, whether we like it or not. There's a medical need for abortions. And an abortion is not ever something that I've ever seen any woman, and the many women that I've talked to that have had abortions, I've never met a woman who took it carelessly or without thought or as if it was just a method of birth control. I've never met a single woman like that or person that's had an abortion ever. So circumstances are key. And unfortunately, we cannot always see someone's circumstances before we judge them. So what people, I think, need to realize is that these are human beings in situations. 1 in 3 women is going to have an abortion. 1 in 3 women also have a C-section. So why is one medically normalized and one not, and one widely available and the other not?
Well, stay with me, Monique. We are going to hear someone else's story now. Sue Bohr has an experience that is in some ways similar to Monique's, but her takeaway is incredibly different. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Are you ready to tell your story? I know it's unusual to talk about such a personal thing in such a public forum.
Yes, it is. My abortions took place 33 years ago and 32 years ago, respectively. I've been married to the same husband now for 29 years. But in my first marriage, I had an extramarital affair, and it resulted in a pregnancy. And I had a little girl. So
you had already had a little girl?
I had a little girl. She was about 15 months old. And I did not have the excuse that I didn't know that obviously my products of conception were a baby. And I was caught in my immorality. I was caught. So I thought about my options. I thought about going away. I thought about adoption. But at the time, I wasn't making very good choices. And
can we back up, though? I'd like to understand a little more about your general life situation at this time. You were married. You were having an extramarital affair. You had a 15-year-old daughter.
No, 15 months.
Sorry, excuse me. 15-month-old daughter. Very
yeah, she was a baby.
Different. Can you tell me in some more detail, like, what you felt like in the life you were living at that moment?
I was a little out of control, I guess you could say, in a way. Like I said, I was making poor choices.
How old were you?
I was in my early 20s.
So do you remember finding out that you were pregnant?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
It was devastating, because I really felt I knew that it wasn't my husband's. I probably couldn't be 100% sure, but I was pretty confident that it wasn't. But what he didn't know was that I'd had the affair, and he agreed to the abortion.
He knew you were pregnant.
Yes. But what I didn't know was that there was some other abortions in his life. And so justified it money-wise, just all kinds of different ways. We just justified it. And so that's what we chose to do. And it was really, really hard. And I continued in my ways at the time. And found myself.
Can you tell me also, though, first a little bit more about what was hard about it for you?
Because I had a conscience that it bothered me, that I'd always loved kids. I'd always done a lot of babysitting, and I think consciously I knew that the choice was wrong for me, and so it was really, really hard. I think that it hadn't been restricted or illegal, I probably wouldn't have made that choice. But it was what society said was an option. That's something that I could choose. And
you wish it hadn't been an option?
Well, I know my decision would have been a lot harder. I don't think I would have sought out an illegal one.
What do you think you would have done?
I probably would have opted to... I mean, I honestly thought about having the baby and hoping that it looked enough like me that no one would know. Or going away and having the baby and putting it up for adoption. One of my favorite shows on TLC is Long Lost Family. And it's the reunion show of adoptions. And I get my little box of Kleenex and I watch it. And I always, you know, I have a lot of regret. It would be so awesome that if those two children would have been able to look for me 30 years later.
Because as you had hinted before, you were about to tell us about your second experience.
Right. Yeah. My second abortion, was really, really devastating. It did happen at Planned Parenthood Midtown, and I had met a gal outside that had, she was having her fifth, and I just thought, and it was birth control for her. And I just sat there thinking, oh my gosh, I will never, ever, ever find myself in this position again. And when I had the abortion, I lost it in the clinic. I wailed, and the clinic staff all freaked out to get me quiet, and I shut down so that they'd leave me alone. And it was just, it was really, really hard.
Did you get any guidance? I mean, did you get medical, spiritual, emotional guidance along the way?
Not really. No, not at the time, no. I wasn't in a place. And Planned Parenthood, they just told me it was something that I could, basically they told me they would fix my problem and I'd never have to think about it again. And what they didn't tell me was I'd never forget. And that was what was hard. I think, you know, it's affected. I went on to marry my husband and
Presumably leave the previous one.
Yes, we divorced. And then I met my husband and I told him I'd had, because he was he came out of a Bible school. And so I had done, you know, like, thou shalt not. And I said to him, you don't understand, you know, like, what a mess I am. And when I told him, he said, there's forgiveness. You can, you know, there's forgiveness for all sin. And that's how I looked at it. And so,
is that how you look at it now, that this is a sin that you commit?
It's a very moral issue. Yes, it is.
Do you ever look, I mean, I don't know if this is the same as the forgiveness thing, but I mean, do you look on that younger version of yourself and feel compassion for some aspects of what you were going through? And
oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Lots of understanding and compassion. And I think that if, you know, I would have had some support to say, you know, the bigger picture. And I think often in a crisis pregnancy, we look at the moment and not the bigger picture or the future. I have a girlfriend who, her only pregnancy was an abortion. She went on to marry somebody who had a vasectomy, and they never got to have children. And so she has regret. I have two girlfriends that had crisis pregnancies in high school, and they both chose adoption. One has had a reunion and one hasn't. They don't have regret. And so, but I definitely have compassion and understanding for a crisis pregnancy situation. But I honestly do think that abortion is not the best choice.
Do you think that there could have been something? I mean, I'm getting the sense that you kind of, that you are, would it be fair to say anti-abortion?
Oh, yes. Anti-abortion or pro-life.
And the language is something maybe we'll tease out a little bit later, but do you think there might have been something that could have been available to you that could have helped you make what would have felt like the right decision for you? Rather, I mean, would that have been a possibility, that something would have been actively available rather than abortion not having been available?
Yeah, I think that's why, honestly, when you look back to, we used to have orphanages and stuff in the United States. In other countries, they have lots of orphanages. We don't have them here. You know, I think that it used to be that before abortion was readily available, women, I mean, there was, you know, Catholic Charities, there was houses. I mean, there was lots of, you know, homes for the situation. And
so you're thinking someplace to go.
Someplace to go.
Do you relate to anything Monique had to say when she shared her abortion experience with us?
Absolutely. It reminds me of several of my girlfriends.
Tell me more about what you relate to in it.
The crisis, the unplanned pregnancy, not feeling that you have any other choices.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll give these two women a chance to talk to each other And you're welcome to share your own story. We're looking for comments really on your own experience and nobody else's, though. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. Back in a minute. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about abortion with two women who have come away from their own experiences with very different perspectives. One stands by the choice she made and remains in favor of abortion rights. The other regrets her decision and now opposes abortion rights. Monique Salazar, Sue Bohr, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before the break, I asked Sue if she could relate to anything in Monique's story. And Monique, what about you? Did you relate to Sue's story?
Absolutely. There's always that underlying feeling of fear and crisis when an unplanned pregnancy happens, usually, for someone who's going to seek alternative options. So
what do you think? I mean, I've noticed that in both of your stories, there's an aspect of both stigma and isolation. And I wonder if that's a place that we could look for, like, I don't know, something that people on both sides of this issue might work together to address, stigma and isolation.
Absolutely. I think that the problems surrounding abortion, politicizing it and everything, are the things that create this incredibly strong division between the two camps. And unfortunately, we are letting the people who actually get abortions kind of fall to the wayside, and their personal stories fall to the wayside, and their circumstances. So it's really those that we have to realize and put into context.
Sue, I mean, do you agree with that?
In some regards, possibly. I've done a lot of ministry to women who have had abortion.
And what does that involve?
The first step is getting past the denial that it impacted them and the anger, and then moving forward into a healing place. And that is, something I think that the hardest thing often is the forgiveness, and it's the forgiveness of self. I think we are nurturing by nature, and to choose to not is often something that women do find different or difficult. At some point in their life, they think, wow, what did I do?
Like, on the larger scale, as a society, do you think that there's something that can be done to deal with stigma related to pregnancy, whether it's stigma for a teenager who's pregnant, or for a single woman who is pregnant, or for a woman who has perhaps conceived outside the bounds of her marriage? Or is there something that society can do about stigma, or is that too personal, too related to family and individual morality?
Well, honestly, I think there's less stigma associated with single mothers today than there ever has been. I think in some ways it's almost glorified that you can have a baby if you want to have a baby, and you don't have to be, married or anything like that. I mean, there's a lot of women are choosing to have children young, and I mean, they're not necessarily choosing abortion.
Monique, what are your thoughts about this?
I think that society, is a catalyst of driving human behavior. So the normalization of stories and coming out in the media, not using such harsh words, but actually having a conversation about what's going on instead of just immediately shutting someone down because they have crossed this invisible barrier that you personally have. I think that there's many ways we can listen to women and people who have had abortions. We can listen to their stories. That was the reason I participated in that documentary, because I felt that was lacking in our society and in our media, was actual stories from women and people who have had to have abortions.
You know, I mean, women obviously have abortions for a lot of different reasons, and we can't cover all of those today. But some of those reasons, not all of them, have to do with the constraints of life circumstances, socioeconomic conditions. And I wonder if people on both sides of the abortion issue could agree on working to alleviate those conditions, like pressures of poverty, social stigma, which we've discussed, access to prenatal care, daycare. I mean, can you imagine a common ground on that basis?
There could possibly be a common ground, but we're leaving out a key factor, which is sex education. This country has deplorable sex education. We're seeing, you know, high teenage pregnancy rates, high STI rates, high abortion rates. Why? Because the general populace does not know how to protect themselves against these things. You look at countries in Europe, at Norway, at you know, at Holland, and you see that they start the sexual education in kindergarten. And as a result, they have lower STIs, lower teenage pregnancies, and lower abortion rates in those countries. Education is key if you want to lower the abortion rate.
Sue, would you see comprehensive sex ed as a common ground that you think people who oppose abortion rights in the communities that you circulate in would be part of, would be up for?
Again, I come from a moral foundation, a very conservative perspective. And so for me, I believe that abstinence is key in preventing all of it. And I know that not everyone is going to agree with that position. It is something that I taught my children, that, you know, you don't have to worry about it if you're not participating. I think the lack of responsibility with people not taking responsibility for their choices is often the problem within society. It's always somebody else's fault, you know, for whatever. And I think that's where we need to start. Is I don't agree that sex education needs to be taught in kindergarten.
So that sounds like maybe unlikely to serve as common ground.
No.
I mean, do you both feel that reproductive justice, like that phrase represents something that you care about or pursue?
Reproductive justice, I think, I'm not sure I would ever use that term. But I'm like not a person who thinks that abortion should be your first choice, but I do think it should always be a choice. And that's something that we have to, you know, keep in mind, I guess. But I wouldn't go so far, I guess, as reproductive justice.
I would agree that I don't think we'll ever rid the land of abortion.
And that would be, if you were to use the phrase reproductive justice, that's what it would mean to you?
I'm not sure. I know that I have an understanding of the term that you're using, but I think we can agree that abortion should not be, I mean, it should be a last option. I think women should be given better choices in their health care.
Do you think that the other choices should be part of the public debate? I mean, in the public debate, it does focus so much on abortion. Should it involve other things? And
absolutely.
So what are those things?
I think I still think adoption is a valid choice for, you know, people in these situations. I think, you know, often we look at this as...
But I guess I'm curious. Do you think that, I mean, in your situation, when you're talking about that you were afraid that an affair you'd had would be discovered, I mean, part of what's going on is that there's an entire 9 months of pregnancy mm-hmm. to go through before an abortion, and I guess that there's still something to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. But when you look at a lifespan, 9 months isn't very long. And then, you know, your decisions are always going to have that ripple effect to the rest of your life. And so, you know, I personally had friends who chose to do that.
Let's talk with one of our callers. We don't have a lot of time, and I apologize for that, but let's hear from Joe and Lenexa. Hi, Joe.
Hi. First of all, I just want to thank all of you for being so open and contributing to this discussion. I think this is important and something that I hope more than just NPR listeners will hear in the course of the day. I just want to talk about briefly my story. Bear with me, it's a little complicated, but basically, in 1990, my birth parents were they were going through just about to end their junior year of high school. They ended up having an abortion, and then 3 months later, I was conceived. And I think this is something that that needs to be talked about, at least in terms of education and like responsibility, that were both themes brought up by both contributors here. I think that we need to understand that because of because of their experience with the first abortion is the reason as to why they decided to put me up for adoption. And I was put up for adoption, and before their senior year, I was I had found a family and a home, and 26 years later, I'm all the better for it. But it becomes an interesting place where, in order for me to have lived, there needed to have been an abortion. Now, I am personally opposed to abortion, but I think that abortion should be an option. If not, I don't think that we can really tell people that, hey, no, you can't do this or anything like that. Because we never learn from the sin, then, is that in order for you, one of the contributors, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, in order for you to have actually learned and figured out that, hey, all this is terrible, you had to have sinned and have gotten the experience of the sin. And because of that, yes, we needed to, unfortunately, this sort of education and experience helps us inform our decisions for the rest of our lives.
Let me get some response to this, but thank you so much, Joe, for sharing a really different perspective with us. Monique, I mean, listening to Joe and Sue, who both oppose abortion and see it as sin, and they're both, they still come down in very different places politically on this. But do you think, I'm curious about your response to what you're hearing from them.
It's nothing new, I suppose. These are arguments I've all heard before. But there's other different circumstances for everyone.
Well, so. We're going to see how this translates into public policy and discourse after the break. I'm Gina Kaufman, and KCUR Central Standard will resume this conversation about abortion after the break. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Now let's hear from the executive director of Kansans for Life and the CEO of Planned Parenthood Great Plains, Mary Kay Culp, with Kansans for Life. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Laura McQuaid with us from Planned Parenthood. Hello.
Good morning, Gina.
Laura, just quickly, big news out of Missouri that a judge has struck down restrictions in the state and that ruling will allow Planned Parenthood to make abortions more readily available in Missouri.
We see yesterday's decision by Judge Howard Sachs is just a victory for patients in Missouri seeking abortion care. Being able to seek that care closer to where you live and with fewer barriers that are entirely medically unnecessary is what is the constitutional standard and is certainly what is the healthcare standard in the United States. So we are thrilled with the decision that we received from the judge yesterday.
When you listen to the conversation we're having to see if there's anything people on both sides of the political issue can agree on, what goes through your mind? Do you hear something that it would sound like common ground to you, or do you hear people dividing as they tend to do politically, even in this personal conversation?
I think what's so wonderful about sitting with Sue and Monique is that it is a reminder that this is a deeply personal and individual issue that has been politicized over the recent decades. Sue and Monique have so much common ground in that they are describing their own personal set of circumstances and their own thought process that led them to make that decision. And I respect both of their opinions because both of them have the capacity to make those decisions, but also to experience all that came after that decision in their lives. And unfortunately, when we have this conversation in the political arena rather than the individual and healthcare arena, it becomes very disconnected from personal experiences.
How?
Because you're able to step away from individual women like Sue and Monique and look at their circumstances as individuals. We cannot walk in anyone else's shoes. And the right decision for one may not be the right decision for the other and vice versa. And in the political landscape, our opposition sets one set of standards by which everyone needs to live. And that is not something that we can accept in the political arena, particularly after hearing two deeply personal and important stories here on the show today, Gina.
Mary Kay, what have you been thinking as you hear all of this? I mean, do you come away from it with the same takeaway as Laura?
No. I think the saddest thing is when Monique talked about she didn't feel like speaking to a crisis pregnancy agency had was an authentic conversation. If you only consider the authentic conversation to take place inside a for-profit abortion clinic, you're really missing the boat. And what I'm sad about is that society has gotten to the point, but it's been like this from the beginning. We've always been stereotyped and blacklisted if you're pro-life, and we know we're a bunch of old ladies in tennis shoes that want to hit you over the head with our Bible. In fact, the crisis pregnancy centers are manned by women who've had abortions, who've given up babies for adoption. And
can I ask you something? I mean, do you think that those centers should be obligated to give medically accurate information? Do you think that should be part of the law around it?
I don't know. I depend on what they think is medically appropriate. It would really need to be medically. What are you saying here?
I'm just asking because I think that's part of the question that a lot of people have is whether the information they're getting is separate from a political position or an end decision. You know what I mean? Like whether the medical information is objective.
By medical information, if you mean different kinds of abortions without having actual alternatives to the abortion, then no. But if there is, I don't think a crisis pregnancy center has to sit there and hand out information about where people can go get abortions. They're trying to let people know to listen to the whole tape here, to the end of your life. Let's think about this. I had a girl call me one time, very upset. She said, I used to be singing pro-choice outside the student union at KU, but then my boyfriend and I, it was her fiance, they got pregnant senior year, and they went to Planned Parenthood thinking someone would really sit down and spend some time exploring their future with them if they had this abortion. But she felt like she was in a cattle run. They had the abortion. They got married a year or so later. And she was calling me because they had a darling little one-year-old toddling around the house, and they were both sick at their stomachs. And they didn't feel like anyone warned them about the real human consequences in their own lives about it. And I think that that's the problem. If you work in an abortion clinic, you have to believe that's the right thing to do. You're not really an unbiased observer here. You sold one yesterday. You're going to sell one tomorrow. If you demean abortion in a day in between, you're really sort of indicting yourself. And so I don't think it's even possible to get unbiased information there.
Let me get some response to that. Response to that from Laura McQuaid.
Clearly, I believe that that's fundamentally incorrect. Planned Parenthood.
But I mean, can we focus on the aspect of, is it possible to give objective information?
Of course it is. At Planned Parenthood, you receive information about your entire healthcare experience. Obviously, in addition to providing abortion services, we are providing annual exams, contraceptive counseling. I'm surprised we haven't talked yet about perhaps the potential middle ground of access to contraception as something that we can talk about. Maybe we can explore that a little bit later in the show. But also, it is about all of the options on the table. And in fact, because you believe that a woman has the ability to choose an abortion, doesn't mean that that is the only option. And there are people who work in our health centers. I myself am a mother. I have two children. I fundamentally believe that you need to be able to decide if you want to have children, when you want to have children. And if it's not the right circumstance, you need to be able to make that decision too. There is not just this, it's incorrect to suggest that you cannot see a circumstance where there are lots of different options. That's not what's happening inside of Planned Parenthood or in any independent provider or private OBGYN office across this country. It's just simply not what's happening.
Laura, it sounds like Mary Kay is suggesting in part that women need spiritual and emotional guidance or someone to help them figure out what is the right personal choice for them. And it sounds to me like that isn't necessary, that you're providing medical information, you're providing options. Where do you think people should go for the kind of guidance she is talking about?
A woman has the ability to make her own decisions. And each woman has to choose the spiritual pathway that they take to make that decision. Some people will consult their family. Some people will consult religious counselors. Others will consult their husbands or their partners. Each individual woman has the ability to sort through what he or she needs to make that decision. And not everybody has all of those tools at the time. But as Monique said, as she settled into this decision, as time went by, she realizes that while she would have wanted a different experience for herself at the time, she had the capacity to make this decision and to not only live with those consequences, but to celebrate the life that she was able to lead because she made that decision.
So I want to ask both of you, I mean, can you imagine any kind of middle ground from a policy standpoint, or is that question in and of itself just pure insanity? I'll start with you, Mary Kay.
You know, if I felt like everything I've learned over the last 40 years and that I know was something that was going to be made known to everyone who was considering an abortion, it wouldn't make me go home and quit. I'm never going to give up. However, I feel a lot better about it for the women involved and, of course, the babies involved if that kind of information was available. But we have information all the time that's out there. We have videos out there of what's taking place inside Planned Parenthood that they don't want anyone to watch at the Center for Medical Progress.com. Or you can go to our website at KFL.org. Or you can go to Advice and Aid Crisis Pregnancy Center on in the front of the yellow pages. You know, I really invite people to look at the arguments on both sides and what's available on both sides. And there's a lot of compassion on our side.
Let me get some response from Laura.
It extends to the mother and the child.
Well, I certainly hope that people listening to the radio do not go to the website of a convicted criminal who engaged in illegal activity in order to put forth an extreme political agenda.
We're probably not going to get to agreement on that, which
right.
makes me think that I'm maybe answering my own question about middle ground.
No, I don't think so. I think Gina, there is, I think there can be middle ground. I think there is middle ground. Again, we haven't had the country, we will never, ever stop fighting for access to safe and legal abortion. We believe that it is critical. Before Roe v. Wade, 1.2 million American women were seeking safe, unsafe, illegal abortions, and over 5,000 of them were dying annually. We will never stop fighting for that. But I think that there's so much common ground that we can have around contraception.
Mary Kay, just we're about to be done with the show, and I want to know from you, you know, Laura's suggesting contraception is possible middle ground. Would it be for you?
As far as what I do for a living, no. And we really are here to try to keep women from going into a Planned Parenthood and knowing that and thinking that's their only choice. But I also want to say that Chris Wallace, when he was with 2020, did an undercover video at Laura's Planned Parenthood. There was an episode on fetal harvesting at that Planned Parenthood in March of 2000. And
okay,
so they don't want to talk about it, and so it makes kind of coming together a little bit difficult.
It sounds like coming together is proving difficult. Laura, anything you want to say about that before we go? We've got just a few seconds here.
Education and access to contraception is critical to allow women to make different decisions in their lives, but always knowing that abortion will be there. I think that if we had more conversations around access to contraception, we could find that common ground.
Well, okay, and there's probably a lot to clarify that happened at the end of the show here, but our time is up. Mary Kay Culp, Laura McQuaid, Monique Salazar and Sue Bohr, thanks so much. Mary Kay Culp was with us from Kansans for Life, and Laura McQuaid with Planned Parenthood. You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/Central Standard later today. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Caitlin Troutman is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next, so keep on listening.